Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 93, recorded Friday, September 9th, 2011. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: classic travel stories, recollections from the week of September 11th, and travel tech, traveling with a Google Chromebook. Well, I'm at the end of a very rare 3 weeks straight in town. Since the last podcast, I did my normal rotation, a week in Phoenix, a week in Dallas, but then worked at a home for the past 3 weeks. 1 week, I had to take my son off to college. The following week, I had a customer meeting in Chicago, actually, on a Wednesday, which meant I really couldn't go much of anywhere else and get anything meaningful done. And then this week, between the Labor Day holiday and flying out to London today, Friday, again, it just didn't make sense to go anywhere. So with all that, I've been working the long commute between the second floor master bedroom and my first floor office, eating leftovers out of the fridge for lunch, and, you know, sort of generally getting underfoot as far as my wife and daughter are concerned. Now, you know, during the London trip, during this trip coming up, it's going to give me a chance when I come back to try out my global entry pass, where I get to go through, where I've gone through pre-screening so that I can skip the long immigration line returning, in this case in O'Hare. So I go up to a row of kiosks that are over to one side, scan my passport, you know, get my thumbprint scanned, and then I should be able to walk straight through to baggage claim. Now, they had something similar to this around, I don't know, like 99, 2000 for U.S. immigration in Toronto. So flying from Toronto to the U.S., you'd clear immigrations and customs in Pearson Airport in Toronto, which, you know, allows the carriers to then land those flights in the domestic terminals, which makes then connections a whole lot easier. Anyhow, the program back then kind of had a similar approach to the global entry. There was a kiosk that took fingerprints, and I actually think it was an actual full handprint, and then automatically opened a gate. A little gate just went boop and popped open, and you would walk through if, you know, the prints matched, and then you got to skip the immigration line, and then you go on to the customs. And the bargain was about the same. You had to submit to a background check and then give the government biometric information in exchange for a line cut. I mean, seemed like a reasonable exchange for me, but I know it's not for everyone. I mean, guys who are working with me in Toronto were very squeamish about giving the government sort of, you know, any more information than was absolutely necessary. You know, today, though, I'm not quite sure, you know, why it would be all that squeamish, you know, given all the closed circuit TVs that are monitoring public spaces and things like EasyPass on the, you know, on the East Coast, the toll paying devices, it's iPass here in Illinois. Well, those track all your driving patterns, and, you know, sort of cell phones with GPSs can track all my physical travels, and website cookies track all my virtual travels. So I kind of wonder why I've actually got to give the government any additional information at all. Following up, you know, let's sort of spelunk through the virtual message bag. Can't say mailbag anymore because, A, when was the last time anybody actually saw a mailbag? And, B, I mean, there are so many ways of connecting anymore. Probably 75% of the messages I get don't even come in through email. So anyhow, with that little riff, let's start with Gary Lerner's recommendation for a note-taking application for the iPad. Gary asks, hey, have you taken a look at NoteTaker HD on the iPad? Pair it with a good stylus and it replaces the Moleskine. It was developed by Dan Brinker, the inventor of VisiCalc. So anyhow, I downloaded Notaker and started playing with it. And I'll tell you, it seems pretty powerful. I think I'm going to actually have to watch the YouTube video tutorials to really figure it out. Having said that, I'm not sure that it's ever going to replace my notebooks, my Moleskines. Though I am, at the end of the day, a pencil and paper guy, or a pen and paper guy at heart. I mean, I still use this cheap plastic Waterman fountain pen that I bought in Belgium some, 20 years ago. I do, though, like Notaker's diagramming capabilities. I mean, it seems like it's almost like Visio for the iPad. Now, Jim Kearns suggests repurposing your old phone when traveling overseas. Jim says, some quick thoughts on the overseas data problem. When you're done with one of your current GSM phones, Mark, in your case, the iPhone, don't discard it. Keep it for travels. When you get overseas, buy a SIM card and a data plan. It can be a phenomenal savings. In Australia, I paid $30 for a card that came loaded with bonuses, about 250 Australian worth of calling and data. In Germany, it wasn't quite as good, but it was still a better deal than roaming by a long shot. And in Fiji, it was a solid deal. I mean, you get the picture. You use the phone for email, Google Maps, which now allows you to preload data, and web browsing. Keep the SIM cards for your return visits. You just need to top them up. It's easy in most countries. You can even do it at ATMs in most places. Jim, thanks for that great suggestion. I've actually done that a bit before. Usually, not so much for business travel. I haven't done it before, but more so for vacation travel. When I'm going to be someplace for a couple of weeks, it's very handy to have a local phone number. I've done it in Hungary. I've done it in South Africa. But my bigger problem is that I never get to keep my old iPhones. Between my wife and two kids, there's always somebody waiting for a hand-me-down. Carl Wooden posted this on the Travel Commons Facebook wall. Hey, was thinking about your tagline, it's not the destination but the journey. Traveled by ferry through the fjords of Norway on the way to our hotel, and the ride was spectacular. Hotel wasn't. Ouch. Kind of makes you wish you were bunking on a ferry, I guess. Lori Hum also posted a good suggestion on the Travel Commons website. Lori writes, Twitter is an excellent way to get customer service. Just be sure that you are using the service channel and not the regular product one. At Delta Assist, all one word, versus at Delta. I've used it regularly when I see something go awry, and I always get an immediate response. Lori, that's a good suggestion. I think a lot of times we don't necessarily always understand that there are different Twitter channels. Again, I think that the comparison of Delta being more of the marketing channel and Delta Assist being more the customer service channel, that's a good one. Quite honestly, I've made that mistake myself, where I've tended to track the marketing Twitter channel, just because that's the one that's the one they promote. It's the one you can more easily find. And I would say it's a better use, or more productive use of Twitter than I think most travelers. A recent tweet I saw said, if Twitter didn't exist, you'd have no idea what airlines your friends are currently furious at. And I got to tell you, I love that tweet because it's absolutely me. Lori also, actually, in that same post on the Travel Commons website, she shared a bit of a travel story from recent times. She says, I had some excitement today, was trying to fly out of Baton Rouge, and the plane was nearly 2 hours delayed. According to the Delta website, the plane had actually landed. And the gate agent made the announcement that the plane coming in had a mechanical problem. I'll tell you, it sure did. It couldn't lower the left side landing gear. Now, Baton Rouge has a great view of the runway, so the entire airport got a ringside seat for an amazing landing by the pilot. The regional jet landed with the right wheel and front wheel, then ended up dipping to the left and dragged the wing until it stopped. The pilot had circled around to burn off fuel before landing. Everyone was fine, and the passengers praised the pilot. Now, I got to get psyched up to get on one of those things tomorrow if I want to get home. Hey, if anybody has a question, a story like Lori's, a comment, a travel tip like Gary, Lori, and Jim, send them along. The email address is comments, C-O-M-M-E-N-T-S, at travelcommons.com. You could always use the voice memo app on your iPhone or something like virtual recorder on your Android phone to record and send in an audio comment. Or you can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. I guess that's at M. Peacock. Or post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page like Carl did. Or you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. So the first topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is from classic travel stories, recollections from the week of September 11th. Some headline writer at USA Today, I think, won the No Duh Award last week with the headline, Air Travel Changed Forever by September 11th. With the 10th anniversary on Sunday, I thought it was a good time to reach kind of way back into the Travel Commons archives, back to episode 14. From September 2005 for this bit of oral history.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast, a special edition of Classic Travel Stories, recollections from September 11th, 2001. Today's anniversary, 4 years later, can still bring people to tears. But I'll tell you, when you get travel folks together, as you talk through those travel stories, inevitably, someone will break the ice and talk about what happened to them on the day of September 11th. They were usually someplace away from home and scrambling pretty hard to get there. For me, actually, I was lucky in that on the evening of September 10th, I was in Toronto and had to be in Miami the evening of September 11th. And when I looked at the flight connections from Toronto down to Miami, they just weren't that good. And so I caught the last flight out of Toronto September 10th at about 10 o'clock, and so got back home that night. September 11th, I was driving into my office in downtown Chicago, and my mother called me on my mobile, saying that she'd been trying to frantically get through to me and telling me what was going on, what she had been seeing on the television. And at that particular time, I was actually driving right past the Sears Tower and noticed a large number of police officers suddenly arriving in front of that building. I was a lucky one. Some folks weren't quite that lucky. My little sister was actually at a mortgage banking conference in Vancouver, Canada, and her husband called her once he saw the planes going into the Twin Towers, and told her to get out. She hopped in her rental car, raced down to the U.S. border, was the last person who got across the border as they closed it. My brother-in-law had luckily reserved a car for her, and she actually found three other people who had been with her at the conference, and they all drove together for the next couple of days from Vancouver back down to her home in Denver. Another friend of mine was actually in Manhattan on that day and talks about the mayhem and talks about how he trying to get home. And again, here's another guy who lives in Denver. He's in New York. He and a whole group of people were walking across the Whitestone Bridge to get off of Manhattan, get off of the island, and eventually just sort of walking along till they got to a place where they could rent some cars. And again, three other strangers hop in a car and start driving west. And that's a story that you hear many times over, how people came together, the only way to get home was to drive, getting in a car and heading off and spending the next two, sometimes 3 days together as they all drove back home. Folks from the U.S. were trying to get back into the country. Tell some different stories. Of course, the borders were closed for a number of days, and so you literally couldn't get back in the country. I mentioned that I had been in Toronto on September 11th, 2010. I had a project team up in Toronto doing a project, and of course, I mean, I was lucky to get out, but they had to stay up through the week. Now, there are worse places to be in Toronto, so it wasn't too tough duty. But come sort of Thursday, Friday, they wanted to get home. The project team that was up there came out of two offices, one in New York and one in Chicago. So the New York folks hired a car. There were about, four of them, and they all drove down. And it was not a good drive for them. They got lost. They got, I think, somewhere around Niagara, and then again, sort of further down south in New York. They got lost. They got turned around. And, you know, what should have been sort of a, 5-8 hour trip turned into sort of 10 or 12 hours. The two guys were going back to Chicago, though. They were smart. Rather than renting a car, they hired a limo. They got talking to the concierge at the Sheraton that they were staying in, and he set them up with a limo, and literally for the same price as a single coach airplane ticket between Chicago and Toronto, they got a complete limo. Two guys. One of the guys had just bought one of these portable DVD players, like literally the week before, so they popped out to the store, bought a handful of DVDs, and I don't know what kind they were, and I never asked that question. I just let it flow through on the expense report. Got a cooler, stocked it up with beer, sat in the back seat, and headed for Chicago. It's an 8-hour drive, and they actually said it was great. It was just a straight shot. Really, the only decision they had to make was when they hit Windsor, and did they take the bridge or the tunnel through Detroit? Luckily, they made the right decision. They took the tunnel because the bridge was just jammed up with truck traffic that had been waiting all week to clear customs, and apparently it was a huge tailback. And so they just took the tunnel. Boom, they were home. 8 hours, no fuss, no muss. They actually bought the limo driver dinner in Chicago, and then he turned around and headed back home. My final recollection that week was looking up in the sky, and where I live outside of Chicago, depending on the flight paths, we can get a good bit of air traffic coming into either O'Hare or into Midway. I remember that week looking up and seeing no planes, and a number of us remarking to one another how quiet it is. And as I sit back and I think about the nearly 3,000 people who died on that day, it is that quiet that I think about, and that quiet for them, that I hope for them and their families.
The second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is traveling with a Google Chromebook. You know, as I mentioned in the last episode, I attended Google's big sort of geekapalooza earlier this summer and received a nice bit of silicon swag from Samsung, a Samsung Galaxy Android tablet, a Verizon 4G Wi-Fi hotspot, and a Samsung Chromebook. Now, with most of my technology kit now being Apple-based, I thought it gave me a good opportunity to compare what you really are, I think, the two sort of emerging visions on the future of personal computing. So this past summer, I hauled around both the Google and Apple equipment. Not a big deal with the tablets, but I'll tell you, carrying the Chromebook and the MacBook Air represented a significant increase in carry-on weight. But, you know, it's the only way I know to truly compare equipment, really, is you got to live with it in the field. Now, given that, I think the only way to sort of fairly approach the Chromebook, that being the concept, the approach, the philosophy, not just sort of the Samsung bundle of hardware, is really as a beta product, a work in process. I mean, I'll give you that it's not priced like that. The initial price from Amazon for the kit that I got was $499, though I think they've started to mark them down. Maybe there's like a $50 markdown on them. But given that I didn't pay that, I could look at it truly again like a beta product, and I think give it a bit more of a fair review. So for the month I carried it, sort of the end of July, beginning of August, you know, Chrome OS was not a whole lot more than Google's Chrome browser and just enough driver software to run the hardware. And even that was a bit iffy at times, especially with Wi-Fi. I had a real problem keeping it nailed up to some of the hotel Wi-Fi spots. Indeed, I've still got that problem occasionally at home. And to be fair, I mean, that's sort of the main use case for the Chromebook. The design ethos is completely cloud-based. No local file system, no native applications, just open straight to the browser and get working. And, you know, looking past the Wi-Fi issues, which, you know, are easy enough to resolve eventually, the Chromebook works that use case well. Open it up, it boots in seconds, syncs up to your existing Google profile, you know, make a change to Chrome on one PC, so add a bookmark or an extension, and that automatically appears on the Chromebook. However, if you're not connected, you're dead in the water. Indeed, the Chrome browser won't even open. Not so great for a frequent traveler because there's still a lot of planes without GoGo in-flight wireless. And although the version I got came with a Verizon 3G modem built in, I mean, it's a bit of a hassle to always have to associate with the network to do anything. I mean, yes, Chrome OS boots up in 8 seconds, but then it takes a couple of minutes of fiddling with Wi-Fi hotspots if you're on the road, or, you know, even for the 3G modem to sign into Verizon before you can even see your hotel confirmation number. I mean, I'll tell you, my old HP netbook running Windows 7 could come out of sleep mode quicker than that. But again, it is a work in progress, and that's, I think, how you have to think about it. I mean, Google has recently released an offline Gmail client and also has some ability to view but not yet edit Google Docs. I mean, it's getting better, but I don't know. I just can't see the Chromebook as a usable tool for a frequent traveler, you know, mainstream frequent traveler anytime soon. Now, it's not to say it's a complete loss. I mean, after I finished traveling with it, I gave the Chromebook to my high school daughter to try out. She absolutely loves it. She opens the lid, boots up immediately, and then she's onto Facebook or Tumblr or the new Harry Potter Pottermore site. And she hasn't, you know, she hasn't installed any Chrome extensions because everything that she does is web-based. And she's using it at home where I think we're now up to about 3 wireless access points that are sort of bathing the house in 2.4 and 5 gigahertz web connectivity. So I think that little white Sammy, that little white Samsung with the little Google Chrome bullseye, I think that's found a good home with my daughter. As a matter of fact, she just recently went out and bought a bright orange laptop case just for it. So I think it's found a good home, and I think it's found the right home with the right generation. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Comments Podcast number 93. I hope you all enjoyed this podcast, and I hope you decide to stay subscribed. The episode's bridge music is For Me Again, playing around with GarageBand. Not that I'm looking for a new career as a musician. I just did not have time to crawl through the usual PodSafe music sites before I left for London. So a little bit of DIY. Sorry for that torture. Hey, again, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along, text or audio file to comments, COMMENTS, at travelcommons.com, or to mpeacock on Twitter, or write them on the Travel Commons wall on Facebook, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks to everyone who helps me get this podcast out by taking the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments, and give me your thoughts, questions, suggestions, stories. I really appreciate the help. Take care, and until we talk next time, travel safe, and thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now. Life is hell, strange bed in a lonely motel. But one thing needs my mind, the warm woman that I left behind. From California to Carolina, she calls me up and there's nothing finer. And when the tears start falling,